This week, the NASDAQ closed at the highest weekly level in its history. Welcome, everyone. Chris Walczak, great to be back with you with another big show. This week's top guests include adventure capitalist Jim Rogers from his Singapore office. He's waiting patiently for buying opportunities in the precious metals sector, anxious to add to his impressive stockpile of gold. While the U.S. shares continue to climb higher, he's watching lesser-known stocks. Twice as many have moved lower over the same period. And the recent Brexit may have signaled an end to EU hegemony. Several other nations could be the next to leave, and he's a big fan of agriculture. Then Peter Leides agrees with the host, gold could be the only real wealth. An ounce of gold historically holds its value. He thinks that U.S. shares are reaching frothy levels, thanks in part to the negative yielding sovereign debt worldwide, the first time in global history. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest big report. Well, a few clouds rolled in over the precious metals this week on central bank monetary expansion and solid domestic employment numbers. By Friday's close, the yellow metal was off just $13.50, about 1%, finishing at $13.34. Silver closed nearer $20 at $19.83. Off 53 cents, about 1%. The precious metals XAU shares ended at 66 cents, finishing at 109.60. West Texas Intermediate crude added about 20 cents a barrel, closing just above 41.80. After a few weeks of intense selling, black gold appears to have found a convincing bottom here. Meanwhile, the yellow metal had its best first half in nearly four decades, as three top central banks printed money like it was going out of style. The BOE, the EU, and the BOJ, the ECB, and the BOJ all expanded their monetary balance sheets by printing to support their economies. The Bank of England governor announced this week the bank's first interest rate cut in 7 years. It sent gold prices soaring to a three-week high to support the sterling amid the Brexit and related fallout. In related news, bullion is up about 30% so far this year. The Federal Reserve held back on tightening, and money manager Bill Gross says investors should favor gold and real estate while avoiding stocks and bonds. Although doing quite well, really trading near break-even compared to gold and silver, not very impressive. In a Bloomberg TV interview, Bill Gross said he dislikes bonds and stocks because central banks have simply not bought enough gold, which makes it that much more enticing. Japan unveiled a series of stimulus packages as well. The combination of central bank easing, all very positive for gold. Bottom line, precious metals. The markets took a break this week on the solid U.S. dollar rally. Simply put, the BOE, BOJ, and the ECB forced currency investors into the U.S. dollar as they burned their paper to try to hold the economic edifice up. The near-term weakness doesn't look so bad on a longer-term chart with solid support below the current price. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the NYSE on solid domestic employment numbers. The Dow Jones Industrials added 111 points, finishing at 18,543 for the week, while the S&P 500 picked up 9, about 0.5%. At 21.87, and the NASDAQ Composite added 59, over 1%, finishing at 51.62, closing higher for the 6 week running, and perhaps its best weekly close in its history. Meanwhile, the CBOT Fed Funds futures indicate higher odds of a rate hike in July of 2017. That's really the first time we've seen anything like this, with about 42% probability of 75 basis points versus 38% probability of 50 basis points, or holding steady. Now, this small increase in rates, though, occurred on Friday following news from the Labor Department that the domestic employment number improved in July for the second month running and wages increased. It suggested that Fed policymakers may have some wiggle room to increase rates. Payrolls climbed by 255,000 last week, exceeding all forecasts in the Bloomberg survey, on the heels of 292,000 in June. The national unemployment rate held firm around 5%, and the average hourly earnings, as I mentioned, rose more than forecast, its best number since April. Bottom line on Wall Street. The markets continue to defy gravity. With no signs in the charts of slowing, U.S. stocks simply remain the best opportunity around amid solid economic conditions relative to competitors. However, the fear to greed index does remain extremely excessive levels, very frothy. That suggests that value investors might benefit to wait for better entry points. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio, and we'd like for you to stay with us right here. Jim Rogers from his office in Singapore. Jim Rogers, financial author, commentator, hedge fund manager, co-founder of the Quantum Fund, and the author of several bestsellers. Welcome back.
I'm delighted to be here. It's always fun.
Thanks for joining us. And, you know, we've had an interesting run this year in the precious metals. Certainly caught a lot of folks off guard. The strength in the XAU, for instance, nearly a 200% from trough to peak in just 6 months. Is this a blip on the radar screen, or is this something more substantial in your estimation?
Well, gold and precious metals have been going down for several years, as you know, 4 or 5 years. And it's normal to have a rally in any bear market. To me, it's a blip on the radar screen. To me, it's not real. We've had several of these since 2011, as I know you know better than most. So I'm not buying yet. I expect more corrections and more opportunities.
U.S. equities, you know, we've had a seven-day rout. There hasn't been a trend emerge in the major indexes. It's been just sine waving for about a year, year and a half.
There hasn't been a trend. It's been mainly that the big stocks are going up and everything else is going down. In 2015, even though the averages were fine, twice as many stocks went down on the New York Stock Exchange as went up. I repeat, twice as many stocks went down as went up. Even though if you looked at the averages, you would think, wow, things are great in the U.S. economy and the U.S. stock market. The same thing is happening now. Most stock markets around the world are down this year. But if you just look at the New York Stock Exchange averages, you would think, my gosh, world is great. Unfortunately, the world is not great, as anybody out there in the street can tell you.
We haven't had a chance yet this year to find out what Jim Rogers thinks about the sea change event there in the Euro, the European Union, Brexit. It seems as though it was somewhat of a close call, 48% to 52%, but the people spoke. How does this impact the Eurozone? Will it break up the EU, or will they just simply reorganize and sort out the problems?
Well, first, we need to remember that whenever the people are unhappy with the economy, it's always the economy that starts people being unhappy. They blame somebody. They always try to blame the foreigners, especially the foreigners, and it's happened throughout. It's happening in the U.S. right now. It's a common thing. So that's what happened in the U.K. It does certainly going to mean a reorganization of the EU. Unfortunately, I don't see how the EU can survive as we know it. The European Union, and the European currency, a great concept, and the world needs something like that. Unfortunately, it was badly executed. You know, everybody used phony bookkeeping. Everybody cheats on their accounting, so they say they're better off than they are, and that's catching up with us. So the euro, as we know it, will not survive, and the EU, as we know it, will not survive. The question is, will anything survive? First of all, when you have changes like this, it's going to cause turmoil, as we saw when the Brexit vote took place. The second, can the world survive? I don't know. You see more turmoil if other current countries leave or other people want to leave the currency. That's going to cause turmoil. And you may have more votes of people wanting to leave their own countries. There are Spanish who want to get out of Spain. There are Italians who want to get out of Italy. There are Belgians who want to. There are many, in nearly every country in Europe. There's some people who want to get out of the country as it exists now. So those votes, whichever way they go, will cause turmoil, and you will have more countries voting to get out of the EU. Whether they go out or don't go out doesn't matter. The turmoil is what I'm talking about. So we have a lot more turmoil coming. Be worried.
It's ironic because I know a lot of folks who emigrated into the U.S., hardest working people I have ever run across. And I think you're right. The people at the bottom of the political totem pole have a tendency to be scapegoated, vilified, ostracized. And this is a theme that we've seen for hundreds of years. So I think it's a fantastic point. But I'd like to move on, though. Negative interest rate scenario, $13 trillion worldwide. A lot of exposure to interest rates. Everyone says rates can never go up. Do you see this negative interest rate theme continuing? And will U.S. policymakers eventually throw their hat into the negative rate ring?
Well, what's happening is, since negative rates are so common throughout the world, more and more people are putting their money into the U.S. That's one reason the U.S. stock market appears to be high. They need to get income. Whether they buy U.S. bonds or U.S. stocks, whatever, they've got to have income. And in the U.S., we still have positive interest rates. So that's bringing more money to the U.S., and therefore the U.S. dollar will go higher. And that's just going to make more distortions. People are buying the dollar not because the dollar is sound, because it's a place where they can get positive interest rates. So all this artificial stuff that we're experiencing right now is going to end very, very badly.
As we wrap up today, is there anything else that you're watching closely? Maybe the mainstream media hasn't yet picked up.
I talked about buying agriculture before. I would certainly continue to buy agriculture. You should be very, very worried, because I mentioned the distortion of money going into the U.S. dollar. I own a lot of U.S. dollars, but that's a distortion. I don't approve of it economically, but it's happening, so I have to invest accordingly. But that's going to really distort a lot of markets around the world. Just listen to your program and be knowledgeable, because if you become knowledgeable, you will get very worried, and then you will get prepared. We're really going to have some problems in the next couple of years.
That's right, and buy Jim Rogers' books as well from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Thanks for making time for us this morning.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Peter Leides, editor and publisher of Stock Market Cycles, in the markets for many decades. It's a pleasure to have him back on the show. Welcome back, Peter Leides.
Thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate that. It kind of makes me feel old when you say many decades in the market, but it's true. I believe that we are, in terms of price and magnitude of moves, I believe we're very close to a market top. But having said that, I will also say that on the intermediate term, short to intermediate term, I think we are, in fact, we may be at a market top, but I don't believe it's going to be the final market top. There are so many things happening internally in the market, Chris, in terms of strength and breadth and advanced decline line and 52-week highs that intimate that if this is going to be a top, then it's not going to last very long, that there should be a higher high after this, or at least a test of these highs with the kind of divergences we like to begin to see at market tops. We have not seen those divergences yet, and that's one of the main reasons why it does not make sense that we're at a top here. On the other hand, if we look at things on a more fundamental basis, and I very seldom do that, but there certainly is a very strong argument, as you stated, that money has to go somewhere, and right now, we look like the only game in town to a lot of people with a lot of money.
I wonder if you could tell your thoughts on the market sentiment. It seems a bit frothy. The put-to-call ratio and several other metrics just seem to indicate that maybe bullishness has reached almost a fevered pitch.
Yeah, I would agree with that also. I don't know as I go so far to say a fevered pitch, but it is certainly in many metrics as high or higher than it's been in quite a long period of time. In fact, we could argue that it's higher now and many measurement factors than it was at the highs in May of 2015 for most of the market averages. And let's also point out, Chris, that the New York Composite Index, which is theoretically at least the most broadly based of all market measurements with every stock on the New York Exchange, has not yet gone to a new high above the May 2015 highs. That high, by the way, was one that I did not think would be broken by either the Dow or the S&P. And now that it has been, I think we really are living on borrowed time here. I can see this extending into the fall. But, of course, the fall is only a couple of months away now, and we get ourselves a decent decline here and then a move back to these levels with, as I said earlier, the kind of deterioration internally in the market that I think is required to see an important top. And we may be looking at something that's a lot more important.
A few years ago, you could count on virtually a good, solid 3, 4, 5, 7% return on a diversified portfolio. Those days they're just gone. It's ancient history. You're lucky to earn 1, 2% dividend yields, of course, across the board on the S&P. And, of course, the price-to-earnings ratio, very extended relative to historic norms. We have the bond market as well, reaching extremely frothy levels simultaneously. This just doesn't traditionally occur, tend to be more negatively correlated, that is, stocks and bonds. Can you give us some reasoning behind it, or would you prefer to stick with the technicals?
Well, I think you've hit upon the exact reasoning for it, Chris, and that is that let's look at it this way. The people we have to feel sorry for, and I'm moving into that category myself, are the people that have worked hard all their lives, amassed themselves a certain amount of money that they figured they could retire on, a comfortable interest rate, conservatively gained at 5, 6, maybe even 7% if they were lucky, and they'd be set for the rest of their lives. Well, guess what they're getting now? You know as well as I do that they can't make 1% on their money. So if you're faced with that after these decades of hard work and labor, figuring you'd be okay if you amassed a certain amount of money, they now have to become seekers of market return, and they go out and do things they should not be doing. They should not be putting money in places where there is risk involved. But indeed, that's the only place where they have any promise at all of making money. So that becomes a huge problem, and it's a problem that in pretty big fashion and not too far away. But it's hard to put your finger on exactly when the price is going to start to be paid for all of that. I mean, what rising interest rates are going to do is finally make these people, the fixed income people that have worked for so long to get themselves some money they can retire with, a little happier. But on the other hand, that's going to completely rip apart our system that is so heavily based on debt right now, both on an individual consumer basis and on the governmental basis. So it's almost a no-win proposition, Chris, in terms of the next 2 or 3 years.
I don't think a host could ask for a better segue into alternatives to the paper assets, because chasing a yield is just a non sequitur at this point. It really leaves us in a bind as investors, and we start searching around for value, better relative value. And, of course, near the beginning of this year, investors said, wait, there's value, especially in a negative rate environment, over $13 trillion worldwide now in debt and sovereign debt going into negative territory. That really makes precious metals an intriguing alternative. And whether or not you like them or not, or whether you even allocate any to a portfolio or not, the story is compelling now after many tough years.
Yeah, I used to follow the precious metals markets a lot more closely than I do now, Chris. But certainly on long time being around basis, saying that, you know, we know, although some people might argue, but gold is really the ultimate money, and that there is definitely value there. The question becomes, what are people willing to trade up for? What kind of risk are they willing to take? I mean, the old expression used to be that an ounce of gold would always buy a good quality man's suit. I don't know what that means anymore, because you can get a decent quality man's suit for $300 or $400, but the kind of quality that we're talking about may be more like a $1,000 or $2,000 suit. So is gold overpriced here? I don't believe it is, but it's obviously in a situation where it faces what we might all be facing, and that is a deflationary situation. And I'm just not smart enough to know what's going to happen with gold in a deflationary situation. I can give you an argument for a move in either direction. I think the most important area to touch on, and it's not a timing tool, and it doesn't tell us where the market's going to be next month, next week, or next year, but we are, without question, once again, and it's happened now three times in the last decade and a half, in one of the most overvalued markets in history. I would encourage, I don't know if you ever speak to them in terms of interview, Chris, but I would encourage your subscribers and your listeners to listen to Hussman of Hussman Econometrics. He's got a website. It's free. It doesn't cost any money. Go and look at his interpretation of where we are valuation wise, and he actually has a valuation metric and that has worked over a long period of time, over the last century, let's say, as opposed to the so-called Federal Reserve valuations and all these little game playing things out there that really have nothing to do with true value or undervalue or overvalued measurements in the stock market. We are truly at one of the most overvalued levels in the history of the stock markets.
Everyone listening to Peter Leidy's voice today, we'll have links for you. Just click those links at the website or the email as you come across. It's really interesting information at the HussmanFunds.com. I think that's the one you're referring to.
Yes, it is. And he does a weekly commentary. I don't know what it's listed under, but it's on his main website. And I think it's under weekly commentary.
He shares your idea, basic premise on market cycles and themes and biases. Very interesting reading. So I hope folks will look into that there. We'll definitely put up the links there, as well as to Peter Leidy's market cycles as well. Hope you have an excellent summer sabbatical.
Always fun to talk to you, Chris. Thank you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. Willie Navalier runs Navalier and Associates and is also editor of four leading stock advisory newsletters. Welcome back, Louie Navalier.
Great to be here.
You know, I wanted to talk to you about your latest report. You talk about corporate earnings. Now, clearly, this is a key component to every equities bull market. You know, after all, even Warren Buffett has shown for decades that steady, predictable earnings, a key to success, although it's not as sexy maybe as the high-flying stocks, the reliability of earnings seems to win in the long run. In your latest newsletter, you do outline how this is the best announcement season that you've seen in years. Tell us some more, please.
You know, I just finished doing my emerging growth letter. To say the earnings are strong is a bit of an understatement. My average sales this last quarter were up 70.6%, and earnings were up a whopping 374.4%. Now, that's as good as it's ever going to get. For the third quarter, they're supposed to decelerate. Sales are supposed to decelerate to an annual pace of 52.6%. And earnings are supposed to decelerate to about 147.8. Now, I have earnings surprise on average. The analysts will revise their estimates higher, so I'll probably do better than that. But the reason earnings momentum has just peaked here is the dollar's gotten strong. And earnings were being fueled by a weak dollar that was driving commodity prices higher. And companies were reaping windfall profits from their overseas business. So all of a sudden now we're in a deflationary environment where we've got falling food and energy prices, and earnings will decelerate here a bit even though the economy looks fine. But the other good thing that's going on is they can't raise rates. Britain and the U.S. said they're going to raise rates. Now they say, no, not till wages go up. And global yields collapse in August, you know, when the German 10-year bond crossed below 1%. It's almost been cut in half this year. And now there's this global capital flight, all this, these trillions of dollars that central banks have pumped in and sloshing all over the place, and one of the recipients is the U.S. stock market. And that's why we went up in August in light volume. It's a very, very exciting time.
I wonder if you could outline a few companies with solid prospects. I know that you keep a core group without giving anything proprietary away, maybe a few companies that you like.
Well, let's talk about, I have a little drone company. I have a big one called Northrop Grumman makes the Global Hawk drone, but my little one is AVAV. That's AeroVironment. Apple Victor. They just reported 35% sales growth. Their earnings were up even in a more impressive 1,000%. And there's not good analyst estimates on this company, but they're a classic example of one I expect a surprise from. Because last I saw, the drone business is pretty good, especially at police departments and things like that. Another good example of a company that's supposed to have just blowout earnings is Ring Energy, REI. Their sales forecast the next quarter is supposed to be up 408%. Earnings are supposed to be up 1,550%. Obviously, they got a bunch of new wells on, and I know gas and crude oil prices are soft, but, you know, they got all these new wells coming on board. And so they're going to have just stunning sales and earnings growth. So, you know, the fracking business is very, very good. Our biggest winner, which we still like, in fact, we bought more of it today, is Vishop Holdings, VIPS. This is a Chinese, basically a Chinese Amazon, but they make money. You know, Amazon in the United States forgets to make money every now and then. And their sales are our forecast to be up 125% next quarter, and their earnings supposed to be 183%. So that's just stunning. I mean, it's just stunning. So I've got lots of earnings. Earnings are not a problem. The biggest problem we have is that we're starting to enter a deflationary environment, so we're going to have to be very careful of some of our energy-related stocks. But this looks awfully good right now.
Tell us some more about deflationary environment. You know, you talk about the Fed holding rates low for the foreseeable future in the newsletter because they keep rattling that saber with regard to higher rates. But the other side of the pond there, the ECB lowered its rates now, as I know you know, into negative territory. First time that I can remember in history that a major central bank lowered rates below zero.
Our Fed's being somewhat responsible by trying to wind down quantitative easing. It should be wound down by October. Now, because they've done all this money pumping, They've gone from a $800 billion balance sheet in 2008 to a $4.5 trillion balance sheet. And they've taken over $2 trillion of that to shore up the mortgage-backed market. It just doesn't hit on all cylinders now. So they tried to save that market, and they were successful. But they're not going to give all this money back. They're going to keep that $4.5 trillion balance sheet. With interest, we'll get up to $5 trillion. And they're going to continue to manipulate interest rates. The big problem and the big event that caused the market to rally in August was European yields. Even though our GDP resurged to 4% annual pace in the second quarter, that was a preliminary number, it's going to get revised, Europe basically went into recession. You've got Germany, France, and Italy all either flat or contracting. That freaked everybody out. Their yields plummeted. And the European Central Bank is out of control on their money pumping. You know, they basically told their member banks to go ahead and borrow at 1% and go buy the government bonds. So they drove the bond yields for Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain dramatically lower. You know, Spain bond yields, 10-year bond yields, fell below U.S. yields this year. And, in fact, Spain's at the lowest interest rate since 1789. And that's trillions of dollars. The banks in Europe are so busy arbitraging, you know, borrowing from the ECB at 1% and buying something higher yield, they forgot how to lend. So they would park their excess reserves with the European Central Bank, and they charge them negative rates. And then basically the ECB is saying, hey, go out and lend this money. Well, guess what happens when you're lazy? You don't want to do that. So all of a sudden the U.S. dollar started to rally, so they just started to dump their money over here. So they're getting a currency tailwind, okay? Plus they're buying our yields, and they're going lower, which is a short-term appreciation. And so it's the European money that is actually driving our yields now lower. And, you know, it's a very small world out there. It's pretty amusing. So, you know, our central bank action was coordinated, and it seems to be not coordinated anymore, although they just got together at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and I think they had a little chat now that they're a little bit more coordinated all of a sudden.
This month is a particularly challenging one for Wall Street. Traders on sabbatical. You also point out that the lull could be a good buying opportunity, though, for conservative A-rated stocks.
We should rally going into Labor Day weekend, like we go into most holiday weekends. If you look, we rallied into Memorial Day weekend. We rallied in July 4th weekend. We're going to rally into Labor Day weekend because people are going to be happy. We will cringe around September 11th because of all the chaos in the world, but that'll be a good buying opportunity then. Hopefully nothing bad will happen. But the drop-dead date for everybody to get in, the last person in the pool, is September 30th. So historically, in a midterm election year, September 30th has been the best buying point, and we rally going into midterm elections. Obviously, we're going to have more gridlock after the midterms, as you do in most midterms. Wall Street loves gridlock. Apparently government can't do anything. And so the private sector will just grow and prosper regardless of government. And then we get all the seasonal surge. We're still going to have a very good third quarter earnings announcement season. Not quite as strong as it was in the second quarter. But and then you hit the happy time of year. You know, from Thanksgiving into the year, the markets traditionally rally. There's year-end pension funding. People are happy in the holidays, and that rubs off on the stock market, and you often have a nice small cap rally. I mean, August has been very significant because we've rallied with no volume. And so August was really capital flight from fixed income investors seeking yield. You know, stock market still yields over 2%. That's more than the bank. It's tax advantaged. But it was really not only U.S. capital flight, international capital flight, and then, of course, if we can rally with no volume in the seasonally strongest month, it's a big deal. And corporate buybacks are definitely picking up. CNBC's out there broadcasting buybacks are slowing down. They don't know what happened in August. They're going off of old data. I can tell you, because I have 37 stocks buying back $1 billion or more a year, the buybacks picked up big time in August.
And you show quite an interesting graphic there, which illustrates the significance of buybacks relative to stocks. But I wonder if you could give us more of a specific view of how this fuels value. I mean, obviously, there's fewer shares out there. Supply and demand dictates that we'll have a higher price. Tell us more, please.
Well, sure. One of the more controversial stocks I own is Lockheed Martin. It yields about over 3%. It's retired almost 40% of its float. So what people don't realize is that we may be cutting back, but our allies are buying like crazy. And, of course, there's all that tension in the world, so that's good. And then finally, so that gets their sales up. But Lockheed's a huge IT company. They have been stabilizing their stock with their dividend and relentless stock buybacks. Their dividend payouts are actually lower than they were a few years ago because they bought back over 40% of their stock. But when a CFO buys back his stock, his earnings per share go up. So let's just say earnings are flat, okay, and he buys back 10% of outstanding stock, his earnings per share will go up 10%. So relentless corporate buybacks are boosting their underlying earnings per share. Now, a lot of people will say, well, this is financial engineering. This is smoke and mirrors. Well, yeah, it is. But every kid that goes to business school learns about finance 101, whether they should borrow in the debt or equity markets. And what happens is if Wall Street doesn't price your stock right, and you have my average large cap stock has a return on equity of 28%, and if they can borrow at 3 or 4, and buy their stock back with that high return equity, their earnings per share is going to soar. And so when you have relatively low price-earnings ratios, as we do now, you know, our average large-cap stocks barely at 15 times forecasted earnings, and you can borrow at such low rates, you're going to keep borrowing, buying your stock back. My average large-cap stock is going to be gone in 18 years. It looks like the buyback pace is picking up, so I might have to revise that to 15 years. So it's whether this is right or wrong, this is what's happening. And this is a big, big deal. And that's why every dip is a buying opportunity. And that's why the market can't have a big correction, because corporate America is waiting for every little dip out there to buy their stock back.
I want all of our listeners to really digest what you've pointed out, because I think this is key. Essentially, you like the fact that we have a low interest rate environment, because this allows big caps in particular with strong return on equities to have a cash buffer between what they're borrowing at and the liquidity and cash that they have on hand. That is cash that has to be put to use, and we don't have a rip-roaring economy, so they're buying back their shares.
Correct. And, you know, corporate America also has two sets of books. They have domestic treasury and international treasury. And so, you know, a lot of people wondered, how did Navalier end up in Reno, Nevada? Well, it's pretty simple. I'm from California, and guess where the California companies and the big Washington companies like Microsoft keep their cash? Reno, okay? Apple, Cisco, Oracle, Intel, the Intuit founders, my neighbor. Microsoft's the biggest employer there, and Amazon's huge there. So they're running their cash through Reno because they don't want to have the corporate taxes on their domestic revenue. Now, what's happening is then they have their international treasury. Now, that's going to be in Ireland or Singapore or someplace else. Now, as these companies build up all this cash overseas, it burns a hole in their pocket, and it's fine if they want to expand. They will not repatriate that money because they don't want to pay the tax differential. You know, so if you pay 25%, say, in Canada, and you want to bring it back to the United States, you got to pay another 14%. So what they do is they leave that cash overseas, it burns a hole in their pocket, and they often will use that money to buy their stock back and or, okay, use that collateral over there to borrow extra cheap over here, which is exactly what Apple did. You know, Apple got up to $179 billion overseas, so they could just borrow extra cheap because they have all this money sloshing over there. So, you know, there's this big gossip about inversions on stuff. I can tell you, forget it, the S&P 500 is not chartered in the United States anymore. It's been gone for years, okay? Don't ask me why the financial media is talking about this now. They left a long time ago. You cannot find a big U.S. energy company headquartered in the United States. Halliburton's Qatar, Transocean is Swiss.
What about Sunoco? I love Sunoco.
Well, you know, I have to check that. You know, MEMC Electronics, Mountain View, California, that's Cayman Islands. Seagate Technology was Ireland for a long time. I mean, just don't be surprised, okay? So, you know, obviously a lot of the pharmaceutical companies are Irish, you know. But the bottom line is, you know, these companies go to the low tax havens, they keep their cash there, that cash has been burned a hole in their pocket, and if they don't know how to invest it, they just buy their stock back. So the buybacks are not, I don't see them ending. I mean, you know, if Wall Street doesn't price a stock properly, corporate America has every right to go back and buy their stock back, and that's exactly what's happening. So this is very, very exciting. This is not being told by the media. You know, Herb Greenberg loves to get up and demonize buybacks.
Also wanted to ask you about the, the latest Fed's minutes there. I mean, we saw a sea change, you might say, at least in the general sentiment, and we're starting to hear some hawkish talk coming from the Fed. But you aren't buying it. You think this is, they're just trying to talk the markets down. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the hawks are a minority at the Fed. And even Charles Posner, I believe, voted against what the Fed statement was last time. He's to say he's hot as a pistol is an understatement. He's PO'd, okay? So the bottom line is you have a lot of progressive people at the Fed trying to fix everything by throwing money at it. And Janet Yellen, our new Fed chairman, is a labor economist. And she came up with her own indicator, 19-component indicator, to explain that even though the unemployment rate fell, the job market isn't fixed and the Fed hasn't fulfilled its unemployment mandate. So she's looking at there's too many temp jobs. You know, a lot of companies are still keeping people under 30 hours a week because they don't want to pay for their health care because the costs are uncertain. Even if the costs were certain, there's a Cadillac tax coming in 2018. I know I'm personally going to get hit with that for my health plan. It's too generous. I mean, I got to strip something out like anesthesia or something. But I think the government makes me have that anyway. So they're going to try to throw me to an exchange. So, because our health plan is just too generous. So what's happened is they're keeping the people under 30 hours a week. The labor force participation is at a 36-year low. And the most ironic thing is the folks over 55 are working more than ever. Now, there's this myth that the labor force participation is 36-year low because the baby boom's turning gray. But then how come everybody over 55 is working more than ever? So in this era where, 80's the new 60 because you can't retire with low rates, the job market is really, really messed up right now. There's no wage growth, which is really Yellen's big thing. There's too many temp jobs, and the core of the workforce, 25 to 54, is not recovered yet. Okay, there was some hope in recent months, but it's just not recovered. So, until we get some wage growth and more full-time jobs, they're going to keep pumping, and this could be for years. And I don't mean to be political on you, but, Eric Cantor is the guy that was close to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he got defeated because he wanted this immigration reform. Because you had companies like Darden Restaurants and Marriott pushing him big time that we need more foreigners and temporary work visas. And, I happen to live in South Florida, so I see this. You go to hotels, you go to restaurants, You'll get people that are from somewhere else, South Africa or Peru or some other place, and they're there for 6 months and they disappear. And you see the same thing at a ski resort. A foreigner on a temporary work visa is cheaper than hiring an American or legal alien. Because if you hire an American or legal alien and you let them go when the season turns down, you've got to give them unemployment. The whole hotel and restaurant business has figured this out, okay, and so is the ski industry. So what's happened is we need more of those foreigners and temporary work visas, at least the big companies are lobbying Congress for, and that's been pushing immigration reform under the surface. Obviously, it didn't get through because Eric Cantor got lost, but this is one of the things that, still might get through.
But what do you say to folks who point to Canada, which has relatively low immigration, but, the younger crowd fills that void for menial or, let's say, manual labor. They pick in the fields. They work in the hotels. They work, behind the scenes, busing tables. The argument that's being made there is this creates a, let's call it an economic backstop for the middle class.
Well, let me be very clear on Canada. I know Canada a little bit too well. My wife's Canadian. In fact, I can still make my kids Canadian before they're 18 if I wanted to, in case there's a draft or something. But the truth of the matter is Canada doubled its population in the last 30 years, and they did double it with very orderly immigration. But the Canadian immigration is a little different. They basically, when you're up there, they say, got any money? 475, I think, now. But it used to be a quarter million. And so basically you can immigrate there if you bring money. Now, you can immigrate to the United States if you bring money, too. Okay, and I personally think the easiest way to solve all our fiscal problems is to let about 100 million new immigrants in with 2 million each. And also, you want all those people that go to our fancy universities to basically give them a work visa if possible. If you go to Microsoft and Redmond, it is India. For some reason, India makes more programmers than other countries. So Redmond is India. Well, they can't get all the programmers in, so they got them up in British Columbia. And it's going to get to the point where Microsoft's going to be a lot bigger outside of the United States than in it, and that's all because of the work visa problem. So It's interesting what's happening in America, but I think we do want to look to Canada. You know, whether we like it or not, Social Security and some of these other things seem to be pyramid schemes, so we need to get more people paying in, and that's another thing we might want to do.
Well, you know, I will point back to India and just note that for decades there was a huge push for technical skills, particularly with programming, all throughout the country there. If you had one of the higher scores in your community, you could get an almost fully paid spot at the university. So it really drove that programming / computering skill set for decades. Also wanted to ask you a bit more, though, about this inflation outlook. Rates and inflation will be back on the table as, I think, a key component in the markets.
Normally, the money pumping results of inflation, but the velocity of money, how fast money changes hands, is turned down. So near term, what's happened is the dollar rally, last I looked at, euro's at a one-year low and the dollar's at a one-year high. The dollar rally is shoving all commodity prices down. Doesn't matter whether it's precious metals, wheat, corn, soybeans. There are exceptions. Copper prices are up. Beef prices are still high. Hog prices are firm. But the truth of the matter is that the strong dollar caused food and energy prices to decline near term. So, and also, this is the time of year energy will turn down. Turns down in the fall. We've had an unusually cool summer. It's global cooling, I guess, is going to cause it to turn down a bit. But in the fall, naturally does that. So it's gone for now, but it will come back. You just can't have all this money sloshing around not cause inflation.
Well, you know, I'd also point to palladium, which, as you know, Russia, the number one producer, there's some concern there could be supply disruption issues due to the Ukraine drama.
And platinum as well, because platinum comes from Russia and South Africa, and South Africa likes to have like a 40-day strike.
Yep, they just wrapped up the latest. Okay, I want to ask you, though, about your geopolitical standpoint. Now, we're seeing a lot of trouble in the Ukraine standoff. We also have Gaza, and then we have Iraq, a trifecta, if you will. Tell us more.
I should be very, very careful. I bought a whole bunch of defense stocks early this year. Didn't they know that this is the most peaceful time in history? Okay, well, what's happening is they're selling to our allies because of all the tension in the world. Now that tension has broken out. We're very proud that we own Raytheon, which is the Iron Dome of protecting Israel. And, you know, what Israel does is if a missile's coming in and it's going to land in the field, they won't shoot it down. But if it's going to go to an urban area, they'll shoot it down. It's $20,000 to shoot down each one. So Raytheon's done very, very well. The spy business is great. So the drone business, Northrop Grumman, AVAV, that small drone company, it's just phenomenal. Finally, IT business is good. Spying is good, as Lockheed Martin is. I've got a HII, which does all the Navy ships. Had very good earnings. Astronics, another new one I'm adding. They're selling a lot to the Defense Department. There may be a void in the world. We may not be protecting as many people as we used to, but the arms business is very good. In fact, I actually bicycle with a guy who was sanctioned by the UN and is an arms dealer. He's happy. This is the greatest environment it's ever been for him, and he just thinks Putin's a great guy. I mean, because it's good for his business. So it's what's happened in the Ukraine is very tragic. Obviously, Russia wants their oil pipelines or their natural gas pipelines to be flowing freely. There was an alternative pipeline they were trying to build around Ukraine that they're not too crazy about. You know, they know Europe's not going to do a lot, but Russia did hurt their currency when they did this. They joined the emerging market crisis, and what's going on is not very acute. Now, as far as Gaza's concerned, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got to take out Hamas, and because they're launching missiles, and the head of Hamas is worth $2.6 billion. Arafat, used to live in Switzerland. So it's unfortunate that they've had these leaders that are, less than ideal, but they've signed their death warrant. And then we'll see what happens with ISIS now. I mean, obviously we're trying to protect the Kurds, and we got the dam back, and we'll have to see how all this unfolds. The world's a bit of a mess. And as sirens go off, you got 15 seconds for all the shrapnel comes down. I go to Israel a lot. It's a long story why I go there. But, you got to get underground. You got to get somewhere safe because even when you shoot it down, the shrapnel's coming.
Any positive comments? My guess is that you'll be looking for some type of capitulation in the next 6 to 12 months in the precious metals that might lead to a bargain buying opportunity.
Well, you know, gold never did retest this low. It might have to do that. But, you know, the chaos in the world is good for the precious metals. I just think they're reacting negatively to the dollar right now. You know, it's I think as the chaos builds, you know, it might firm up a bit. You know, the Indian winning season is over. You've had some central bank selling that hurt the gold market. We took the sanctions off of Iran. Iran was in oil for gold deals. Now we do oil, they do oil for dollar deals. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, gold's just in a trading range, and I think people have to realize that. But if the market's going to go down for about 14 days, I guarantee you gold will be the best performer. And as you mentioned, the platinum, the palladium plays, those are industrial metals that everybody needs, and the supply sources are very suspect right now. So those are not bad places to and the other precious metals to look at. Silver is just much more volatile. I wish I could give people good advice on silver. My main advice is just take gold and make it three times more volatile.
Well, I wonder if you could tell folks more about the services that you provide at Navalier Advisor.
We're a money management firm. We manage a few billion dollars. We don't count our bond business, which is over $1 billion a year, but basically we're a money management firm. We have a free stock grader out there that people want to take advantage of. Our dividend grader launches in early September. You have to grade stocks differently for dividends than you do for stocks. So at NavalierGrowth.com, you can go there and see how your stocks rank. If you'd like us to do the portfolio checkup for you, we're honored to do that. We give free portfolio checkups. But we are an institutional manager. We have big institutional accounts, billion-dollar accounts. We charge pretty low fees if we do manage money, but the other thing that's odd about us is we're one of the few managers who work for an incentive fee. We like to charge 10% of profits once a year. The SEC restricts on who's available for that, but that's become very popular on fixed income or dividend type accounts nowadays. Fees are a very sensitive issue on yield, so we prefer to just charge 10% of profits once a year, and we wait a whole year to bill. And then I'm a huge investor myself. You know, it's you know, I have a new fund out there. I started. It's my third fund. It's growing rapidly. I have money in all my funds, so we have a lot of fun out there.
Louis Navalier, we want to thank you for your time and also a hat tip for being one of the sharpest advisors with a really solid track record. Very difficult industry to have that moniker, and we're going to look forward to having you back on GoldSeek.com radio.
Great. An honor.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. An important event occurred in mid-July that has faded in the public discussion, but I believe will have a significant and lasting impact for this presidential election and potentially the sovereignty of our high court and how certain decisions are made that will impact all of us moving forward. The scenario I am about to discuss may ultimately not come to pass, but the potential dynamics that could result in this scenario have most certainly been put into place. Most would probably say these dynamics have occurred by chance, but calculated risks and hedging of bets might suggest they have occurred by design or choice in the event certain things happen. I'm referring to the unprecedented negative comments sitting Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg made about what the country would be like under a Donald Trump presidency. She said, "I can't imagine what this place would be. I can't imagine what this country would be with Donald Trump as our president." She also recalled a comment her late husband said about these kinds of situations. "Now it's time for us to move to New Zealand." If we rewind to the 2000 presidential election, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, a known conservative, Ginsburg is a liberal. O'Connor was chastised for commenting out loud at an election party that prematurely called the race for Al Gore, where she said, "This is terrible." Some argued she should have recused herself in what ultimately became the Bush versus Gore case that the Supreme Court heard, which installed George W. Bush as president in 2000. Will Ginsburg recuse herself after what arguably are much more severe and permanent comments, as in a YouTube interview? Should the Supreme Court need to decide who becomes president in this election? Will she recuse herself on matters of policy by a Trump administration should he win? Those are only minor questions, because there are potentially much larger and more far-reaching consequences that her comments have potentially set the stage for. Many are speculating that Trump could win the general election because of many voters who will be voting this time around who don't normally vote and rarely participate in voting polls. If that happens, many believe Hillary could win the Electoral College vote and win the election that way. But this scenario is guaranteed to set off legal challenges from all quadrants before it gets underway. With the death of Justice Scalia, there are currently only 8 sitting U.S. Supreme Court justices. Most contend the court is ideologically tied at this juncture. A fight is underway to hold off on confirming any new justice until the next president takes office. Merrick Garland has been nominated by President Obama, but that is stalled. With 8 justices on the High Court, if Ginsburg recused herself for her Trump comments, there would be just 7 justices, and the split would likely favor Trump. If Ginsburg recused herself and Garland was confirmed, some speculate the court might still end in a tie. The possibility of Ginsburg voting and Garland coming on board early would likely create a firestorm like we've never seen. So the real question that needs to be asked, if we pursue these more centrist avenues that still result in a split court that remains tied on who becomes the next president of the United States, who decides then? That is the dangerous question, as its answer could likely involve the relinquishment of U.S. judicial sovereignty to some yet unnamed international court or panel who will install our next president. This in all likelihood will not happen. But the dominoes are lined up where anything is possible. But it's an important intellectual exercise. Who decides when our country's final arbiter is unable to make a decision? Chris, I'd like to direct our listeners to visit my website at conquerchange.com and join my new email list. I've been gearing up for some time to release new content and special features, which are just around the corner. So please direct your browser to conquerchange.com and sign up today. Updates will follow shortly. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For 2 new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.